No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's like Boy Boy Scott Radio 1. We have no guests today, just us tonight, me and Kathleen. So, of course, we want to know what you think, and we hope you'll call in again at 888-628-6008 or Skype us with your questions. Before I go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen, who hasn't agreed with anything I've had to say all week. So this should be an interesting conversation tonight. Are you there, Kathleen?
Yes, I'm here, Senator.
Are you ready to rumble?
Always.
Because I'm ready.
I'm ready too, boy. I can get all my angst out on this show and give you a piece of my mind.
I can't believe that you can get all your angst out in 1 hour. With all that angst, we'd be lucky to get any of it, a third of it out. But anyway, first, let's start with the good news. We got a new co-sponsor for HR. We should have like a horn or something, you know, that we can like to have on the morning shows that we can blast when this happens. But we got a new co-sponsor on HR 317, the New Columbia Emissions Act, or what we generally call the DC Statehood Bill. Tulsa Gabbard, Gabbard of Hawaii's 2nd District, signed on this week. It brings us up to 120. Thank you, Representative Gabbard. Would you like to guess for a free tour of the United States Senator's Mansion in D.C., would you like to guess what party she belongs to?
Let's see. Is it the Taxpayers Union Party?
No, but close.
Close? Could it be the Let's Free All People from, Ownership Party?
Maybe, but ding, 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 ding. She's a Democrat. Yeah, like the other, which she shares this with the other 119 co-hosts. There she is calling in, evidently.
It's my
to
son.
To tell you that she's not a member of either one of those parties. But she shares her party affiliation with the other 119 co-sponsors of the bill. Been an interesting week for me. I'm going to give this a little introduction. I'm going to let you talk because it's Mother's Day and you always whine that I don't give you enough air time. But I have to tell you about my week. First, we had a press conference with Eleanor Holmes Norton and a whole group of other people, representatives from NARAL, from the Coalition End Gun Violence, from Planned Parenthood, from the Initiative 71 group. We all got together on Capitol Hill and had a press conference led by Eleanor Holmes Norton and the mayor to say, keep your hands off our budget. You know, the Republicans are always attaching budget riders, everything from needle exchange to marijuana to what we do with our school system. They put budget riders on all the time because they have the right to, under the Constitution, even though they have the power, maybe it's better to say they have the power to do it, even though they shouldn't have the right. So we all got together on Capitol Hill and tried to tell them that we weren't going to stand for it. In addition to that, I went to a thing for a fundraising breakfast on the upside for Friendship Place. And you know Friendship Place, Kathleen. We had Jean-Michel, the executive director of Friendship Place, here on the show. And it's just an amazing place. They not only house homeless people, but they train them, and they do it in small facilities that are very supportive, and they've just had an enormous success rate. So, you know, it was great to be part of that. But, of course, my big news this week was I continue my battle with the State Committee, with, you know, the they're trying to keep me out of the convention. We got a hold of the DNC this week, and they've told us that they can't do that. All I have to do is prove I'm a Democrat, which obviously I did. So that battle goes on, and it's just a ridiculous battle. And it just shows why.
Well, can I say something?
Please.
Time that I can say something?
Yeah, you only have a few seconds, then I'm coming back on, but go ahead. That's a little Mother's Day joke. Are you there? Oh, isn't that something? You wanted to say something, now you're not there.
Here I am. Okay, so this is what I don't understand. This is, okay, you know, and I've told you this before and a lot of other statehood people, that one of the biggest comments I get when I talk about statehood for D.C. is that D.C. doesn't deserve it because it's so corrupt. And a lot of people say, well, it's just as corrupt as any other place, but two wrongs don't make a right. And in this situation where you have an elected official who is controlling the Democratic Party process, and I see it, and this is my opinion. I'm Kathleen Gomez. This is my opinion, not anyone else's. I don't only have a bone in this fight because I believe that statehood should be for the District of Columbia. But I don't need a job. I don't get money from the city, so I can say what I see. And I think this is just a typical thing where it happens everywhere, where you get somebody who's been elected and is just so bent on keeping power that, you know, they'll do anything on people that they're afraid of. And I think that she's afraid you've come close to winning, and she's afraid of you, and you have a lot of support. You had 207,000 people who voted for you, more than has ever voted for her. And I just think this is the wrong message to send. This is the wrong thing for her to be doing. I think it's a conflict of interest for her to be on the city council and controlling the D.C. Democratic Party, and to sit there and say, maybe you heard secondhand. Actually, I didn't hear secondhand. I heard someone say that was what they were going to do to show you that you shouldn't have run. They were going to try to keep you from getting a seat at the convention. Now, you know, we've been at the D.C. I mean, the D.C., you get in the door, but they're way up in the nosebleed section, these guys, you know. So how are they doing a favor, or how are they doing what's right by the movement to make a state when they act so like, you know, they're still in the sandbox?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, let me just point out that when you say she, we're talking about Anita Bonds, who's head of the Democratic Party. You know, we certainly expect her to step up to the plate and straighten this out, but she hasn't. And I think that, you know, when we talk about corruption in government, and you're talking about corruption, it's a relative thing, right? And we've had a councilman go to jail, a former councilman go to jail, a councilman go to jail, a chairman of the city council resign in disgrace, the mayor, former mayor of the city of the district, the past mayor lose his election because of allegations of corruption, and he's been under investigation for 4 years. Several of his people have gone to jail or pleaded guilty and had to resign. And, you know, when you look at the big corruption, sometimes you forget the little corruption. And I think you're absolutely right that having somebody who's chairman of the Democratic Party while being an elected official in the District of Columbia just smacks of conflict of interest. And we can see this in what's going on now. You know, I've been singled out, I think, because I ran against this woman. I've been singled out, and they're trying to exact some retribution against me, which is ridiculous. I'm the elected senator from the District of Columbia, and by having the Democratic Party, who's supposed to be standing behind me, because I've always been a Democrat, except for the six-month period when I ran against the chairman of the Democratic Party, and to get around a loophole that we have in the District of Columbia that says that two members of the city council have to be from the non-majority party. And this is the funny thing about this. This was put into the law by Republicans, and the Democratic Party has always stood against it locally. But now, since I ran against the chairman, they're trying to invoke this. And I think this shows exactly why, you know, you don't have somebody that's an elected official run the Democratic Party in the District of Columbia. I think it's just too much of a conflict of interest. And we have all sorts of things like that in the district. You know, another thing that you're well aware of, Kathleen, because we've been reading about it in the papers and you've been part of this, is that the city council reviews all contracts over $1 million. I mean, what's that about? That they get to rubber stamp the contracts of people, many of whom give contributions to them. You know, we just had a big, I won't go into it because we went into it a few weeks ago on the show, but a big controversy where this company was awarded a contract by the people that do the contract awards, and then the city council overturned it for the former contractor who had a bunch of contacts inside the city council, but who wasn't deemed worthy of getting a contract. I mean, so there's all sorts of little corruption, too. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it is that way. And, I mean, I just don't understand. I mean, how much is the budget, the D.C. budget, you know, that they get from your taxes?
$12 billion. $12 billion
a year. And people are paying in. This is your taxpayers' money. Why they don't storm the doors, you know, why they don't hold these councils, fire the feet. I mean, okay, whatever ward you're from, it just doesn't, I don't get it, because that's a lot of money to allow these people to do what they want. And, you know, that was the thing you were talking about, right? The prison, the ones where the department actually reviewed it. How do you then step in and say, oh, no, we want to give it back to the people that has been shown not to, who to have wasted money and not do what they were supposed to do? But the city council comes in. I mean, there should have been an outrage. And the other issue is, you know, how do you hear about this stuff? Because people aren't involved. They, you know, I look and I watch the hearings on TV. You can get them almost all day and night. People have got to get involved. It's $12 billion. How you don't want to get involved and what happens to that money, I'll never know.
Well, you know, I think the problem we have here, which is different than you have anywhere else, is that as the nation's capital, you know, we focus more on national politics than we focus on local politics. And that's part of the problem. Nobody's minding the store. That's part of our problem, and we got to put an end to that. You're right. We got to pay more attention. I don't know what to say other than I don't understand it either. I don't understand why.
And it's terrible because, you know, the one thing I remember when I was working on the Hill, and I always was amazed by the Republicans, is that, you know, they may eat each other up or something, but they're always very supportive of each other. You know, they don't go after each other. They go after Democrats. And the Democrats have got to stop going after their own people and try to actually promote their issues. Now, I guess because I have been a Democrat all my life and I changed to being independent because I'm really sick of the corruption I saw in Cochise County in Arizona and what I see here. So what? if I want to become a Democrat after a year because all of a sudden I decide, well, I'm going to go back to the party, I can't go back because I have to be ostracized?
No. That's not what happens. You can't run against the chairman of the Democratic Party.
Okay, I feel so much better.
That's really the point, isn't it? Is that,
yes,
you know, it's a moniker. It's funny that people out there are trying to make an issue out of this with me about being a loyal Democrat. Hell, I've been a Democrat for 44 years. All I did was, you know, I'm a Democrat at every level. I'm a member of the Ward 3 Democratic Committee, which means that I'm an elected committeeman at the most local level. And I've also served Democratic presidents and worked for Democratic presidents and been at the last 10 Democratic conventions. I'm a Democrat, Democrat, Democrat.
Let me ask you this loophole.
What? Yeah, go ahead.
Does this mean that Graylin, the gentleman's name, I can't believe I'm coming with
it. Raylan Hagler, the minister?
So he was a Democrat, was he not? Do you know?
I'm not sure about Graylin.
He was Graylin. A Democrat before he ran.
Green Party. I can't remember about Graylin, but there were certainly lots of
other
Democrats.
Robert White.
Courtney Snowden. Alyssa Silverman, the woman
Michael Brown. Isn't she an independent? Did she run as an independent?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, so then she should then not be able to go anywhere and do anything that the Democrats do. Is that the thinking? Because she had to change her affiliation to independent. Then I guess that means that anybody, and we've heard that you know, Courtney Snowden's in trouble too because of what she did. She resigned her position. She had a position within the DNC on one of the committees or steering committees, and she resigned because that was what you're supposed to do. But I'm sure she went back to being a Democrat. But you know, Alyssa Silverman, I guess, what does that mean? How is the Democratic Party going to get back to her?
I mean, this is just an excuse. You know,
they need an excuse
to
do this.
But yeah, I've been singled out. You know, they talk about Courtney Snowden too, but Courtney is a deputy mayor now. So if they're singling her out, they're not doing a very good job of beating her up because she's doing just fine, as well she should be. You know, she was a fine candidate, and there were a lot of fine candidates in that race. And it's just ridiculous that they want to do the, you know, that they have so much power. First of all, this woman, Anita Bonds, was elected to her office originally by the state committee. We had a guy named Phil Mendelson, who we're all friends with, right, move up the ladder because another guy went to jail or actually resigned, named Kwame Brown. So he moved up. And Anita, who was in charge of the state committee for years, the state committee got to appoint somebody temporarily until they could have a special election. And Anita, they appointed Anita. And then Anita got elected. You know, that's the thing. There's where the conflict of interest comes in. You should be able to have open, honest elections. And this is what happens. I love the Democratic Party. I've been a Democrat all my life. But you shouldn't have one party running everything. And that's what's wrong in the District of Columbia. We've got one party running everything, and then we've got the party that's running everything headed by somebody that's also elected official.
That's right. I mean, it's just, you know, it's funny because it's the same thing I know. And I always used to think when I was in Douglas that it was because it's so small that it was so vicious. But coming out here to D.C., it's the same stuff. You know, it's like this pettiness that you just, I mean, politicians are supposed to be in it to make it better for everyone, not to, of course, become absolute in their power and not give it up and not make sure that good candidates are in there so you can all work together. It's a terrible thing that you see happening, and it's just a sad thing. And I think what we say all the time is people have got to get involved. They've got to see what their elected officials are doing and call them, you know, call them to it. What is the expression, you know, hold their feet to the fire and say, listen, you know, it's not about your power. It's not about your money. It's not about you. It is you rep, and they get paid well. It's not like they're doing this for free, or they have second jobs. I mean, they make over what, $120,000, and they work
$130,000 for a part-time job, and they can have another job. And several of them do have other jobs. Some of them, Michael Brown was making almost $300,000 a year, and there was a guy named David Catania who ran for mayor, who, as a councilman, was making more than that. He was making, you know, $300,000 plus. So, yeah, they get paid pretty well, which is one of the reasons maybe that they fight so desperately to hold on. But let me just say that this will be an ongoing drama. So we'll keep you abreast of what's going on. We've won temporarily in that the Democratic National Committee has made a ruling that, you know, with us, that all I had to do was prove that I was a Democrat and I would be in. But the state party still further on down the line next spring needs to notify the Democratic Committee of who the elected PLEO delegates or those are, you know, leadership and elected official delegates, of which I'd be one. They have to inform the DNC who they are. So we're expecting some shenanigans at that point, and we've gotten a lawyer, and we'll be ready for them, and we're going to fight this thing. And, you know, we'll just keep you abreast of what's going on. But it's just terrible. It's petty little politics.
And let me say this. Shame on the people that are on that committee who don't feel that it's important enough to stand up and just say enough is enough. Stop playing these games. And that's probably all it would take. But, you know, all this, like, this is what's so amazing is how basically they're all afraid to ruffle each other's feathers because you never know what one needs down the road. But you know what? If you're on that state committee, you're on there for a reason. You're to serve the people that put you there. You're to serve the cause. So start stepping up to the plate and do what you're supposed to do. And if it means standing up to somebody who's just, she's a bully, all you got to do is stand up to her and she'll back down, and you should do the right thing. Do it because it's what it's about. It's about doing the right thing, even though I know everyone says we should, the politicians shoulds and don't. But, you know, heaven help them, really, because they really should be doing the right thing.
Right. And, you know, we all suffer when they don't. So you're right. We got to get people to stand up. And I think we'll work on getting to do that. And that's one of the things about this show that we're trying to do. We're trying to inspire people to go out and get involved. But before we go any further, let me say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there that are listening, especially to Kathleen, who's a mother, my mother Louise, who is one of the great mothers of all time, my wife Pat, Wendy Gomez, who's not only a great mother but a regular listener, Carol, Sue, and all the other people out there that are moms, even the surrogate moms. You know, I lost both my parents at 15, and my sister Patricia stepped up to the plate, and she was my mom. She helped raise me. So God rest her soul. She made all the difference in my life. So all the women out there who play the role of mother, whether your kids, the kids that you support and nurture and lift up, are yours or there's somebody else's, God bless you, because the world would be a terrible place without moms. And let me tell you, give you a few interesting Mother's Day statistics that you might not have known. Mother's Day used to be called Mothering Sunday. Sunday, of course, because mothers are among the most sacred members of our society.
Exactly.
But it was actually made a holiday by a woman named Anna Jarvis, who was not a mother herself, but had great respect for her own mother, and John Wanamaker, the guy who owned Wanamaker's department store in Philadelphia. How smart was this? You know, he's probably made millions, right? Because I'm sure Wanamaker sold great stuff for your mom. And they actually created the holiday in 1908, and it was first celebrated in West Virginia and in Philadelphia, where thousands of people showed up at Wanamaker's to celebrate it. So it was a brilliant marketing idea too. But it became an official holiday in 1914, thanks to Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, it became an official holiday on the second Sunday in the month of May, and that's why the date changes. You know, we can never keep on top of exactly what day it is. And the most that's interesting true. Fact of all, 65% of all greeting cards are sold within a week of Mother's Day.
Wow. So, that must be the
top. Did you send your mother a greeting card?
I did better than that. I sent her a really nice tribute on Facebook, and it gets out to everybody, and then you kind of like, you know, you're out there saying what you say, and everyone else can read it. So it's something, you know, I like greeting cards, but I don't know. It's strange the times we're in.
I wanted everyone to
see what I felt. Yes.
Did you do it because you wanted to see what you felt? Or did you want to save the $3? That's what I
want
to know.
I wanted everyone to know how I felt about my mother. So I put it on Facebook, hoping then that my sons would do something on Facebook, but they didn't. One called me right now, of course, during the show, because heaven forbid that our older children, who are supposed to be the smartest and superior ones, would remember to listen to our show. Although they're very good with comebacks, you know. I mean, Trisha and Diego. Diego just texted me something. Yes, we're all watching your show. We link it together. You know, Trisha, Mary, Pat, myself, and Mateo. Listen to your show, which is a lie.
The thing that really, I think, annoys both of us is they've got a life. You know, they've got too much of a life. They're out doing things like, you know, bowling or dancing or whatever young people do. You know, we expect them to sit home and listen to us, but they won't. And, of course, they you're right, they tell us they do. Well, if my godson's out there listening, you better call your mom, buddy. Let me tell you, leader's going to put a black mark in your book.
Other
interesting and important things to talk about tonight. But first, we're going to take a short break so that Kathleen can explain to me why we're playing this particular song for Mother's Day. I got to tell you, she hasn't agreed with me all week. And when I took exception to this song, you know what she said? And with the greatest, tone of sexism in her voice, she said, "You're not a mother and you don't get to choose. I get to choose." So we're going to take a break. And we're going to play a song that I love, actually, by a fellow New Jerseyite, Cindy Lauper. And it's called Time After Time, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Thanks. Right. And we're back. We don't know where the weird intro came from. We don't know where the weird intro came from, but it was there. And of course, given the song, I don't get it, but time after time.
How do you not get it? Time after time, I'll be there for you. You can be lost. You can fall down. I'll always catch you time after time. And that's what it is being a parent. It's time after time. It's repetition, always being there to save your kids. And that comes into an interesting article that we saw in the Washington Post recently. And an issue that's been out there, you know, is what they call free range parenting. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, it means that you don't put your kids on one of those little leashes. You know, that always used to drive me crazy. And I've had women tell me that I just don't understand. But, you know, I am the father of Nick the Wiggle Worm, so I do understand. I know it's tough sometimes to stay a hold of, you know, keep a hold of them, especially if they're like Nick, who, you know, Nick was high energy, always had to move little boy. When he was little, but it used to drive me crazy to see people with their kids on a leash like they were walking their dog. But anyway, I'm a free range parent.
Yes, me too. And the issue came up when some parents who allowed their children, and they're not like 5 or 6, I think they were like, 9, 10, 11, 12, to walk home after they had played in the park. And somebody called the police and basically said these kids were left to themselves. They were all alone. And the police came and they called CPS and the kids were actually removed from their care for a while. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, because I would have been thrown in jail when they were young. I would let them ride a tricycle on the streets of New York. And, I knew that they weren't going to go on the street with their tricycle. They were going to stop at the light. I knew it. They had to be able to get around by themselves. And, after 9/11, I always made sure that they knew where the hospital, the police station was, the fire station, and they had to walk. And I made them walk. I followed behind them, but I made them walk so that if anything happened to me, because, I wasn't always with them, that they'd be able to at least survive on their own. And I think that that's what's happening with this, where, you have to pick your kid up to school because there's all these terrible people. And yes, there is terrible people, and there's always been terrible people. We just hear more about it because we have so much technology that tells us. But kids have got to start learning how to go to the store, when they're 14 or 15. Or I used to let my kids walk to the grocery store 3 or 4 blocks in New York and get me milk, and they'd come back. And, I guess somebody could snap them up, but I also taught them, to yell as a stranger approaches you. They knew people around the block because we were out in the street. And I just think that this whole thing has gotten out of control, and these helicopter moms got to stop because they're really harming their kids. They're not helping them.
Well, I say that all the time, that I hope my kids never have a problem in life. But, kids do run into problems, and they have to be able to work them out on their own. And, you and I have had this discussion, but it just popped into my head a story that I can tell you that maybe you've never heard before.
I don't know. That'd be pretty rare.
You've heard all my stories. But when I was 6 years old, I was in the first grade. I went to New York City with my grandmother to see a ticker tape parade for the first astronauts and American astronauts. And I went up. I wanted to see better. And I asked my grandmother if I could go up on the steps of the New York Public Library, which I did. And I immediately got lost. As soon as there were so many people in the crowd, I couldn't find my way back. But you know what? There I was alone in New York City at 6 years old. But I had already had Officer Friendly from the Newark Police Department, come into my classroom and explain to us as kids that if you were ever in trouble, you could go to a police officer and he would help you. So that's what I did. There were cops all around, of course, because it was a parade. So I just walked up to a cop, New York City cop, and I said, "I'm lost." And the cop looked at me and said, "Okay." And he took me, and they took me to the police station. And my grandmother, in those days, didn't have fast telecommunications, so it took 8 hours for my grandmother to locate me. But during that time, I was safe. I was in police custody, and the thing that's most interesting about the story, I think, is when she came home, my mother got mad with her and said to my grandmother, "How could he have been lost for 8 hours and you didn't even call me?" And my grandmother looked at her and said, "What the hell could you have done? You're here at home, I'm there dealing with it." But that was more the attitude in those days, was like, train you, teach you what to do, make sure that you were safe, and, as much as they could, and then let you go do stuff. And, I've always been a very independent guy, and that was certainly part of it, I think. And so I think we do a disservice to a certain degree of being overprotective with these kids.
Well, they've got to learn how to pick themselves up and find where they are. I mean, if you have a really kind of cynical attitude about the world, they're not going to be by your side all the time. They have to learn to be able to go out there in the world and ask directions and go up and confront people or talk to people. And, with this technology and stuff, it's amazing how many kids can't talk to you, look at you eye in eye, or you can't even hear them, and they don't know how to speak. They don't know how to make eye contact. They're on their phones, you know, all the time. And they've got to learn to be, to have self-confidence. And the only way I think you get self-confidence is by going out there and learning a lesson or trying something that is out of your comfort zone. And so many parents, I mean, we want to save them from everything. We want to save them from failing, save them from a bad grade, save them from themselves, save them from this, save them from, you know, disappointment, save them from all the things that you need to be able to grow and become a functioning adult.
Well, you know, that I'm just thinking here, that would make a great Twilight Zone, you know, is that one day the navigation systems all fail and kids just wander, people just wander aimlessly around because nobody can figure out where the hell to go. You know, sure. And it is amazing. I don't think that people realize that technology, you know, we gain something from technology, but we also lose something from technology. I mean, you go into a grocery store and you get a bill for $15.20, and you give somebody a $20 bill, and they punch the number in wrong, and they can't figure out that they owe you $4.80 in change. They just can't figure it out, and you want to scream at them, $4.80, you know, but you know what I mean? And I think that by doing everything for our kids, by putting technology in front of them constantly to make their lives simpler, they lose something because they don't learn the process. And so when the technology goes down or when mommy's not around to straighten out the problem, I mean, and look at the moms we have today. I mean, I had a great mom, but my children, you know, she had a 12th grade. She actually went to a thing called secretarial school beyond high school. But look at my wife. The mother of my children has a master's degree. She graduated the top of her class. She's got a lot of experience in life. You know, she's traveled. She's, you know, done other things. And so these kids have this super qualified mom. And there's so many of them in our neighborhood that we see, lawyers and doctors, and that are running interference for them at times, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I worry that they don't know how to do enough on their own.
Right, and I think we do. We all want to you know, to kind of shield them, and we really have to let go. And that's, you know, you can always be there. They always come back, kids. You know, you can always be there and give them help and give them advice, but they really need to make their own mistakes. And so I feel for these parents that, you know, I think they let their kids out again, walk home, and then the CPS was called again. And I think that that's the problem with the government, is intrusive in this part. And people, I think that that's a, I think these kids are going to be more well-rounded than their neighbors' kids, because they'll be able to understand how to function by themselves. And it's becoming a lost art. So I tip my hats off to these parents. It's got to be a hard thing to do. Thank God mine are grown, because I would definitely, you know, I was very much a free-range parent in that, you know, my son, who was, what, maybe in seventh grade, took his younger brother, who was in first grade, I'd walk him to the bus stop. I'd put him on a bus. They'd go down from, you know, say, what was it, 28th Street down to House Street, get off the bus and have to walk two blocks. And they, you know, they came home that way. And occasionally I'd give them a ride, but most of the time that's how they went to school. And I guess I would be arrested for doing that now. I guess that's something you can't do. So I think that it's just getting crazy. We got to kind of get common sense to come to the middle ground. Yes, you want to protect your children, but maybe teach them how to protect themselves.
And please, I think that people have to understand. I mean, it's a scary thing. I've been a parent. I'm a parent, and I've been in a situation where I turned around at a department store. My kid wasn't there, you know, because he walked to the other side of the store or something, and I freaked. It's a very scary thing. But, you know, we need to remember, for every scary person out there that wants to take advantage of a child some way, there are 100 people that want to help. a child. You know, if you see, I mean, how many of us have intervened in a situation where we see a child in distress and said, what can we do? How can we help? You know, we've all, I think most adults, especially those with children, have actually done that. So, you know, we have to keep that in mind too. And I think you're right. I think that keeping an eye, you know, hovering over them, being a helicopter parent, doesn't help them in the long run. Of course, for the sake of transparency, I should also mention that I'm the guy whose daughter walked out of the back of the house, walked down the driveway at 2.5 years old, and was brought back by two foreign AU students who were getting off the bus and saw her walking out the driveway in her diaper and realized that she was too little to be doing that. So maybe I did a little too much free ranging. I did put up a big fence around the house after that, though. We still have like a 7-foot, 8-foot fence around the entire property. Of course, after she did that stunt, she never went near another door the rest of her, childhood. So, but you have to be brave in life and you have to take a few risks. And I don't think you do anything to endanger your children or you know, that you do anything that isn't well thought out. You train them to know what to do. My youngest daughter, Mary, still, because she was taught this, of course, in elementary school, and now she's a smart ass teenager, but every time I go to hug her, she goes, stranger danger, you know. They taught them what to do, I think that people are mostly good and love children, and you know, you have to have a little trust. I also think that sometimes, though, bystanders don't intervene enough. I think most of us that have parents, if we saw a kid crying or we saw somebody abusing a child, I don't mean giving them a smack on the ass, but I mean, you know, hurting them, I think most of us would intervene. I know I would. And I know you would.
Like that mom did, you know. Everyone's, you know, it's been a controversy about, right? You know, the woman in Baltimore who saw her son in the, you know, as part of the riot crowd and just went in there and let him have it. And then there are people who say, why is everyone praising a black woman being your son? Well, let me tell you something. My son, if I was in that position, I would have done exactly what she did. Because, you know, how, you know, you teach your son better, you're going to have to, you know. And she smacked him with an open hand. She didn't punch him. She was like, you know, wake up, man.
It was more embarrassing. It was more embarrassing for him than anything else. And I think that was the message that should have been sent, you know, that look, man, I didn't raise, you could just see it in that woman. I didn't raise you to be out here running the streets, gangbanging with people. I raised you to be a good person. And if you're not going to be a good person, you better not be bad in front of me. I think that's the message he was sending. And I think it got there. And, you know, my dad used to say that, you know, I brought you into this world, I'll take you out. Yeah. You know, I mean, they didn't fool around. They said, look, you know, they taught us that we had certain responsibility.
And there were consequences, you know. I mean, I thought I was being an Indian, and I lit a fire, me and my friend, I think we were, I don't know, 10, underneath my bed. The bed kind of, it didn't catch on fire, but it started, you know, like when you burn a newspaper, there's no flame, but you can see it, the edges starting to go away. Yeah. And then we were in that bed for a while until the smoke was pouring out. My parents were out of town, and the maid, and she was trying to take stuffing out, and we took the bed out in the backyard, and the next morning there was ashes, you know. And my parents were like, grounded for a month. They gave me a spanking, and then I still didn't learn. And then I was playing with fire again, and got this little rug caught on fire. And I yelled, "Fire! Fire!" My dad came in with an extinguisher, and And you know, unfortunately, I was staying in the room where my mom stored all her fur coats, so all her fur coats were ruined, and he grabbed me and whacked me one. I deserved it. I mean, you know, I eventually learned not to play with fire, but, you know, it took a couple of smacks to make me realize how stupid I was. So, you know, this whole thing where you can't touch your children, and in Arizona, I know, it's not illegal to hit your kid if your hand is open. As long as it's open, it's all right to
smack
them.
Well, let me tell you something. First of all, you didn't learn your lesson because you're still messing with me, which means you're still playing with fire. I just want to point that out, number one. And number two, you set the bed on fire? We're talking about your kids walking in the store.
I know. They
should have sent you to juvie. You set the bed on fire.
Well,
you could have burned that house.
Yeah, I could have. That's what my parents said, too. Believe me.
No,
they
I
were
did
telling
the same
me
thing.
Everything.
I did the same thing in that my friend Rick and I were going to burn out a nest of black widow spiders, deadly spiders, which I'm sure were really daddy long legs or something. But, you know, but we were 12 years old, so we didn't know the difference. And we poured gasoline on them, which went onto the side of the house. And when we threw a match on it, it didn't only get the spider's nest. The whole side of the house caught on fire. And then we tried to put it out with a water hose, which just spread the gasoline to more of the house. And luckily, you know, there just wasn't enough gas on the house. It burned out quickly. And it was mostly on the cement. But it did char part of the, you know, side of the siding of the house. So. Yeah, but that, I think, falls under the category that God watches out for children and fools,
right.
You know, because
right.
I did many foolish things in my early life. But you know what? It really taught me how to think. I mean, I was on my own very much from the age of about 14. My mother was very sick, and my dad was gone. And I did a lot of things. I hitchhiked from here, from Washington, D.C. to Canada when I was 14 or 15 years old. And, you know, luckily, nothing bad happened to me.
Charles Manson didn't get hold of you.
But, right, Charles Manson didn't get hold of me. But I learned a lot, and
right.
I became pretty self-sufficient at an early age. And I'm still, you know, I'm still somebody that gets involved and interferes with people when I see things going wrong, because that's the way I was raised and that's how I learned to take care of myself on the street. And that is what really at the core of this, I don't want to digress because we've got to move on to other things, but this is what's at the core of this fight with the Democratic Party, is that I learned a long time ago that the only way to deal with a bully is to stand up to him. And, you know, I've been bullied a lot in my life as a young person. And now I've learned to stand up, and that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I think we all need to do. We need to stand up not only for ourselves, but for our children.
Very true.
You know, and you know, while we're on the subject of standing up, let me just say that my condolences and my heart goes out to the two police officers who were shot and killed in Mississippi. I know they've arrested four people and the investigation goes on, but, you know, what a terrible thing. Both of those officers have been reported as being, you know, particularly kind and sensitive to what was going on in their neighborhoods and you know, really served the community well in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And it's a terrible loss, terrible loss. So what else did we want to talk about? Body cameras, right?
Yeah, I was kind of talking, I was going to lead into it, but then you got carried away on your story about the mother in Baltimore, you know, and then, of course, how the council has made this great decision where the body cameras, right, for D.C. cops, they're getting them. They have them. But now they're going to make sure that they look at them before they release the videos. Isn't that what it's about?
I think that it's more than that. I mean, I think that they've talked, you know, it's before the city council now and they haven't decided. But what the police chief and the mayor seem to want to do is to redact them and only show the redacted version, because they don't want it to interfere with police investigations. But of course, many people are out there saying, if you're going to edit the video before you show it to the public, then what's the good of having the police cameras? You know, maybe it protects the police, but does it really protect the public if you're going to edit the videos and if you're going to allow the police to edit the videos? And whereas I might understand why you wouldn't want to release a particularly sensitive video with evidence prior to a trial, I can't understand why you wouldn't release it after the trial, at the very least. At the very least, that you would release the unedited version to the public after the trial. Because isn't that the point? Isn't that why we want them?
Exactly. I mean, the point is to make everyone, you know, somewhat honest. Unfortunately, that it has to be that way. But I think it also would protect the policeman, too. I mean, yeah. Got a policeman who's doing something wrong. Well, I'm sorry, then he shouldn't be a policeman. But, you know, for all those guys that are doing their job right, I think it also provides a way of ensuring they're doing their job. And this city council getting involved in this is just simply, I guess it's the mayor and I guess the chief of police that want this. And it's not the right thing.
It's just, it seems like a cover your ass move, you know, and you're right. I think in the long run that they protect the cops and that these guys think that they're further protecting the police officers, but they're really not, because if they lose credibility, then it won't matter anymore and they will be protected as well. Well, I see we're out of time.
Are we?
It's Mother's Day. Yes. And it's Mother's Day. So I'm going to give you the last word.
Oh, my gosh. You always surprise me. You never let me get prepared for having the last word because, you know, I just never know if I'm going to get anything in. But I guess I just want to shout out to all the moms out there and you know, to my kids who, you know, I wrote on Facebook today. I said, you know, and it's true. I never really wanted to be a mother. It wasn't something that I yearned to be, that I felt like I had to be fulfilled. In fact, I wanted to, like, travel the world, end nuclear war, and save the whales. That's what I thought I should do to make this world a better place, you know? And my sons were both surprises when it happened. It was almost like the Immaculate Conception, you know? But they've shown me that, you know, I wouldn't miss a whole side of a life that if I had just stayed on the career path. And, you know, being in D.C., I've seen women who have very big positions and are making lots of money, but have decided not to take the time to have children because it is a lot of work if you want to do it right. And it's a lot of sacrifice, you know. I gave up several things because of my son's schooling and where I wanted him to be and where I wanted him to feel. So I do want to say that, you know, thank God I have my sons. They're a lot of comfort to me now. Drove me crazy and definitely have a lot of gray hairs from having them. But, you know, now it's really a good feeling and it's a tough job. And I just want to say shout out to my mom. Shout out to Pat, who you are very lucky to have as a wife, because I would have thrown your ass out the door, excuse me, a long time ago. You are very lucky that she loves you as much as she does. So to all the women out there, I mean, keep it up. It's a hard job, but everyone appreciates it. I appreciate my mother and I hope my sons appreciate me. There we go.
See you next week.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their